There is an endless sea of podcasts about entrepreneurship. Talking about it, but not living it. We live it every day. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel, talking about real estate investing, but also encompassing general subjects in regards to owning small to medium-sized businesses, and of course, all the struggles that business owners must overcome to be successful. This is Inside the Wolf's Den, and this is Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel.
Welcome back to Inside the Wolf's Den with your hosts, Sean and Joni Wolfswinkel. Today we have a special guest with us, Charlie Kriegel. Hey, Charlie, how are you doing?
Doing well. How are y'all?
Really good. Thanks. Thanks for being on here today. So I'm just going to give a brief bio on Charlie. So Charlie is known as an industry innovator and CEO owner of Windhill Advisors Kirby. Charlie Kriegel is one of Houston's top selling and most trusted real estate professionals. Since 2004, Charlie has worked with individuals, investors, and developers interested in the city's most coveted properties with a particular focus on institutional buyer. A high-touch owner with a reputation for his extensive knowledge and unmatched devotion to his clients, Charlie's success is based on upholding the highest standards of excellence, integrity, and commitment. Our clients deserve the full service and attention only a team of experts can consistently provide. Working with us, you'll receive the personal attention traditionally associated with a complex, sophisticated, and deeply personal endeavor. Charlie is ranked number 6 amongst Houston top real estate teams by Houston Business Journal. He served previously as a president of the International Real Estate Federation and has sat on the International Advisory Group Board of HAR. With over 80 licensed agents under Charlie's leadership, Windhill Advisor Kirby has quickly flourished into one of the most in-demand brokerages in Houston. And I actually had the privilege to sit on a few panels with Charlie, and this guy knows what he's talking about. So thought he would be great to have on our podcast to share with our guests. So again, Charlie, thanks for being here with us. Every successful entrepreneur has a story. So I'd like to start off with you telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Sure, I'd love to. And thank you both for having me. It's a pleasure being here. I started my real estate career almost 2 decades ago at John Doherty. So got some of the best training and leaderships from some of the best agents on the planet. I transitioned over to Sudoff Properties for a couple of years and ran one of the largest, I guess, teams at Keller Williams for approximately about 3 years. I was approached by our institutional investor to start our own brokerage, and I took the run at it, and I guess it's all history from there.
That's awesome.
I love that you work with, institutional and built an organization that serves that clientele, and you know so much when it comes to the institutional. That was one of my questions, is like, with all the institutional buyers that have come into our market, what have you seen? What's the trends? Nobody knows what they're going to do or what's going to happen long term, but just can you give us your crystal ball of what you know, what they're doing, what you're seeing, and kind of the outlook?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the institutional investor is here to stay. There's too much Wall Street money behind them. Most of the companies that I work with have raised billions of dollars for acquisition over the next 3 years. So they expect our window to be the next 3 years in Texas. All of them have a very similar buy box. It's 1970s and newer, 3-bedroom, 2-bath. They're staying away from flood areas. But just for example, we're making approximately about 200 to 250 offers per month across the state of Texas for just one of our institutional investors. And we're acquiring out of that probably about 1 out of every 6 offers. So acquiring about 40 to 45 properties a month right now on average. And that's on the low scale. Our target was about 100 properties in Dallas and 65 in Houston. So we're far behind what their target absorption rate is. And that's just one of our institutional investors. The other ones are very similar buy boxes. The one thing about institutional investors, they've got a lot smarter over the last several years. They all have their own internal buy boxes, their own algorithms where they analyze properties internally. So I think they might tweak or pivot a little bit on their buy box, but there's no end in sight. I mean, we ask the same questions almost every month. How much longer will we be buying? And the answer is always indefinitely. They're going to cross collateralize their debt to raise more capital or go into Wall Street and raise more money, depending on their yields. But these guys are hitting some, their benchmarks on their yields are still there. I mean, the rental market, the demand for rental properties hasn't slowed down at all.
Yeah, it's been amazing. And it's amazing how much money they have and like what
they're crazy. Yeah. Well, you know, I wanted to kind of get into your brokers. I know that you have, 80 plus real estate agents under you?
Yeah, we have about 80 plus agents here in Houston, and I opened up an office in Dallas. We have about 20 or so. So we're just over, say, 100 total agents in Wind Hill between our Houston and our Dallas branches.
That's amazing. And I want to just kind of go into like what goes into building a successful brokerage like that.
Great question. I wish I had a simple answer for you, but it's a lot of trial and error. It definitely is the people that you have there, but you have to create a culture within your company to provide opportunities. You have to have the training and technology to allow them to step out of their comfort zone and advance their career. So it's a combination of a lot, but I think more than anything else is building a culture where everybody's going in the same direction, where not everybody's on a boat and they're all rowing in opposite directions. It's really just the technology that you have now at your disposal. The leadership and culture are probably the three biggest things for us.
Did you always envision that you'd be running that large of a brokerage, or is that how you started? Did you envision that long term, or did it kind of just, you know, go and build as you went? Did you have any stumbling blocks along the way that you would want to share that maybe a listener that's maybe has that same ambitions or just running a business, mm-hmm. you know, that could learn from?
And then another great question. Yeah, it was a lot of stumbling blocks, a lot of failure, to be completely honest with you. The first three or four years, more failures than we had successes. I finally hired a coach, and he literally made me throw the playbook out the window and start from ground up. It's providing a solid infrastructure or foundation, because we would build to 100 plus agents and it would kind of tip over. And we just really didn't have our systems in tow. So we had to kind of scrape everything else, build systems to where anybody could come in and plug into our system and learn. But yeah, I would say if anyone out there that's looking to build a brokerage, slow and steady is probably the best plan. Make sure you have your systems in place and you understand your vision and your mission statement and follow that guideline. And then also my only thing that I think I'm very successful is because of the coaches and people I surrounded myself with. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a question. There wasn't something that someone else hasn't experienced and how to deal with those type of problems, because problems always come up in real estate brokerages, always. So just having a playbook or someone else that's very successful and leaning on them was key for me to get over that hump.
What I always think about brokerages is it's in that large, it's got to be difficult because we have 50 some employees, but they all work for us. And I'm not a dictator where like, I'm going to go in and you do what I say, but I mean, like you're managing a ton of entrepreneurs, uh-huh. really. Right. I mean, they're independent sales agents for the most part, on depending on where they are in your company and stuff. But what's that dynamic like trying to, like you said, control the reins or making sure your company and the culture and the motto is all going the same when you got a bunch of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's still an ongoing challenge just to make sure that everybody's mindset and they're all, like you said, going in the right direction and making sure that your name isn't being dragged through the mud by that agent.
Right.
But I think what I do differently than most is I develop a business plan for each individual agent, and every business plan is different from the next. And I really track their goals and their successes, because I know every lead that comes into my system, I know exactly how much that's cost me per day. So kind of taking that mentality and building a business plan, depending on what they want to specialize in, it's night and day different from each individual, and just making sure they stick through that. And then I also just poke holes in their business plan so they know the roadblocks or hurdles that they're going to have to overcome, and just making sure that we follow up with them and make sure they stick to their business plan fully.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, you're, and there's, the more you help them be successful,
the more you're, yeah, absolutely.
And so I think that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Giver's gang for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, you run a lot of their sales. So they're, it's a really a sales organization. Mm-hmm. So you got to have a ton of insight, you know, when it comes to sales and building
a good sales team and all
that. Do you have any words of advice as far as when it comes to that?
Yeah, it really depends on what your niche is or which direction. But I think the first thing for any individual that's looking to build a team is you have to first start off with a CRM system. And there's a million of them out there, but you're never going to be able to scale your business unless you have some type of sales funnel or something to follow up with those individuals. Doesn't matter how much money you spend, how beautiful your advertisements are, unless you have a CRM system for a sales funnel and a system for the follow-up, that's the first key for anyone, is to be able to build a CRM system so they can track their success year over year and figure out what works for them, what's not working, and then how to tweak or pivot as the market changes.
Right.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, and it's simple. It sounds so, you know, but straightforward, but that you'd be surprised how many people trying to run sales or, and they're just like, oh, I got it in my, I'll remember to follow up, but no, you won't, you know. But yeah, we've revamped our CRM within our organizations, three or four times, and improved on it. And you're right, like you said, you got to know to the penny, you know, what spend is working, what, and we got Brett and Kevin that really helped us in our organization really dial down to the penny, like what's working, Google, mm-hmm. postcards, all the, you know, all our different avenues and what it was costing us and what that lead cost and when we close something, you know, and so you really know, okay, do I need to pivot, like you said, or do I need to change something, and what's working, what's not. And I think that's crucial as you're scaling a company.
Yeah, and also being able to hold them accountable as well, right? If you don't have a CRM, like you don't know what they're doing, it's hard for you to be able to coach them and train them if you don't know what they're doing. I know a lot of CRMs out there, you can record their calls and listen. I know we used to listen to all of our salespeople's calls just to, because they have bad habits. They go back to, you know, maybe the old way of what they're doing, and it's not working for them. And so I think it's important.
Yeah, we train a lot on script training and CRM follow-up and sales funnels. But at the end of the day, it still is a person-to-person relationship. Mm-hmm. I tried everything underneath the sun, AI platforms, text messaging. We had SEC and FBI plugging us because we were sending out too many text messages per minute. And if you could hire a computer to purchase and sell a property, I tried it. But it still comes down to a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. And I like, that was one of my points I wanted to bring up with you, is that from all my interactions with you, it seems like you're very customer centric and customer focused and really finding out what your customer wants and servicing them, you know, at their needs and really providing that extra layer of service. And you're saying it, a lot of the times it's a phone call, right? Or a meeting with them, or, you know, face to face, what people would call old school, I guess. Is that correct? Or?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's most of my institutional investors, it's not over promising and under delivering. You can promise them, I'm going to get you X amount of properties, but the market is going to dictate that. Mm. So, constant communication and just doing what you say you're going to do, the same principles as a handshake or, you know, a follow-up call, that still goes the longest way. Thank you cards. I mean, you wouldn't believe what a simple handwritten thank you card will do for clients. And it's just the oldest principles are still tried and true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it, with something we've done in our, like in our management companies, is we went back to hiring customer service advisors, but it's just, and they just proactively reach out, you know, a phone call. And I know people try to automate it and, you know, emails and all that stuff, but people some people just want to just to hear from somebody.
Right. You know, so. Yeah, absolutely. You know what isn't, it's impressive, Charlie, like what you've done with your organization and your team, because with agents, I mean, it's hard to, you know, get them all going in the same direction. So it just shows that you have great leadership skills and you're able to lead your team in the right direction, because that's not an easy task at all with agents. So congratulations on that.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Do you have any leadership advice or books that have really helped you, or has it more been the mentorship along the way?
You know what? I've got a couple amazing books to recommend, especially anyone that's in real estate. If you haven't read Ninja Selling, it really gives you basically an outline on how to be successful. It talks about different clients and their personalities and how to handle it. Another one is Never Split the Difference. It was written by a CIA negotiator. That just really helps you with your conversation on how to pause, how to have conversation, how to ask the right questions. And then my favorite book that I've read probably your Audible like three times in a row is David Goggins, You Can't Hurt Me. That's all about mindset. And I think the mindset is still by far the most important thing for us. If you don't have the right mindset, doesn't matter what your skill set is, doesn't matter what time you wake up during the day. If you're putting off that negative energy and negative flow, that's what you're going to get back in your career, in your life, in your relationships. So David Goggins would be the my number one book. If you can't get motivated by that guy, something's wrong.
Yeah.
All those are actually really good. We've read most of them.
Yeah. So we off camera, we'll tell you a good story about what happened with one of his books that happened to me. But it was I agree with you 100%. Those are great books. I've never read
Ninja Selling, right?
Ninja Selling. It was by one of the top brokers in the nation, but it literally is, we'll break down exactly how you need to handle a buyer, a seller. I mean, it's probably one of our foundation pieces. I teach on it, at least one segment of it, at least twice a month. So if you haven't read Ninja Selling, it is definitely a highly recommended one for me.
That's awesome. What's it like working with the institutional buyers? What's the difference between working with them and working with, you know, like a traditional agent, just working with an investor, single investor, or a homeowner? Just curious.
Yeah, so an institutional investor is going to be different. It's a numbers game. You know, with unlimited capital, you might work 14, 16-hour days, where a traditional investor, you know, can only purchase one or two properties a month. Institutional guys have unlimited capital, so whatever fits inside that buy box, we purchase, whether it's on market or off market. So the barrier to entry on those is a little bit larger, and then your time management has to be impeccable. You have to be up before the sun rises. You have to be willing to work till almost midnight some nights and turn right back around and be up at 5 o'clock evaluating properties again. It is it is not a easy game. It is a grind, but the payoff is exponentially larger than working with a localized investor.
Wow.
Very cool. So tell us about your projects in Mexico. Sean and I always talk about this. Man, I would love to own a few properties in Mexico.
A couple of your panels, I hear like, man, he's selling properties in Mexico. I think he's got some buyers right here. So yeah. So sell us on what you're doing in, internationally.
Great. So yeah, Mexico has been a hot market for me for the last 3 or 4 years. I was president of FIOPSI, which is the Federation of International Real Estate for Houston, which allowed me the opportunity to reach out to a lot of international developers. And I got in with a big group in Mexico. And so we're selling new construction condos all the way from Cancun down to Tulum. And we just opened up Quivira in Cabo.
Wow.
So These new construction are most all mid-rises. So they're going to have the same amenities as a mid-rise here in Houston will have. They'll have your commercial shops at the bottom. You'll have either a personalized pool or a rooftop style pool and bar. Just depends on your price points. And the one that we purchased was only $74,000. That was turnkey with furniture and everything. Wow. That was an efficiency unit. So and our return on our investment there is exponentially better than anything we purchased here in Houston. Those prices go all the way up to almost $1 million, just depending on how exclusive you want it. If you want it in the jungles, if you want it close to a Zona Rosa, which is the main strip, it just really depends on your price point, amenities, and if you want, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bedroom efficiency. But all of these are handled in-house. So everything is turnkey. You don't have to You can either Airbnb it out yourself, or we always have an in-person management team that handles that entire investment from what we like to say soup to nuts.
Wow. That's awesome. Very cool.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have to send us some of your listings afterwards. And yeah, we would love to check that out and see, especially either the Cabo or the ones in Cancun. Or,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very cool.
Vanessa and I are looking to get down to Mexico here shortly. So I'll send you a couple of dates and see if maybe you guys want to come down there.
That'd be fun. It's a blast
because we have our own concierge that takes us around, will show us the properties. She takes you all to a little mom and pop, little locations where all the locals know. So it's just a really cool experience working with brokers down there that live down there, operate down there, know all the hidden gems. So it really is kind of a VIP experience when we set up a buyer down there in Mexico.
That's cool.
Great. Yeah, we'll have all your information on the show notes as well. So that way, you know, guests can get a hold of you if they're interested in your Mexico properties as well. But, you know, one question we always ask our guests is, what's your next? So what's your next, Charlie?
Wow, that's a very loaded question.
Maybe 5 years, 10 years down the road.
Yeah, I really see myself opening up either more offices in our submarkets we're buying in. So San Antonio's definitely on my radar. We're going to be buying in San Antonio for several institutional investors in the next couple months. So having a satellite office in San Antonio. And then I'd also like to just increase my international exposure. So I met with a couple incredible agents out of New York that just sell international properties. They're selling like $600 million villas. And I'd love to, at the end of my career, be able to sell incredible properties worldwide. So I think in the long run, I think it's just taking complete control over Texas, maybe getting my license in other markets that we're buying in, like Atlanta, Tennessee, Arizona. But like I said, I'm going to take it one step by time.
Taking over the world, it looks sounds like.
What have you learned opening up your Dallas satellite office? What challenges and what did you have to do differently than just running your Houston? Just curious. I mean, we've had challenges when we opened up Albuquerque, and I'm just curious your thoughts on having a satellite office.
Sure. I mean, we actually have brick and mortar in Arlington right now, so we have an office space there. It came down to the people. I was very fortunate to hire two young ladies that run my Dallas office, and their personalities are larger than life. So mm-hmm. I only really wanted two or three agents in Dallas to really handle my institutional investor. And when they left their brokerage, they were such strong agents that they actually brought half of their other office with them. So we implemented the same CRM system. We provided that foundation, that structure and foundation and leads. That's worked really well for us, but it comes down to your people. Mm-hmm. If you have a strong enough leader or presence, you can open up an office in any market, but it comes down to, like we talked about, leadership and people. Mm-hmm.
Do you find that having your same culture, have you been able to fully implement that in another market, or is that a struggle at all? Or do you feel like the two women that you hired, do they carry your same culture and able to carry that with them there as well?
Exact same culture, same CRM system, same training schedule, same call nights. The one thing that I did find in Dallas is that the agents, because this is so new to them and the opportunity is so new, that the excitement level is just through the roof. So some of the agents that have been with me for 5, 6, 7 years, they've heard me coach and train for 5 or 7 years. You know, there's not as much excitement. We're in Dallas. They are crushing every single system that we put in place for them, for the CRM, the call nights, working with the institutional investor, cash offer system, all of those things. They've really just kind of grabbed a hold of it and made it their own, which was something I didn't think was that possible, you know, because of, you know, just starting a new office, not being there every day. But just implementing the right systems, culture, and people, they're probably per agent capita, they're probably closing more than our Houston office, which I didn't expect.
Wow. key takeaways that I took from there is you got to have the right people in place, right? Yeah. And then in order for you to duplicate yourself in another city or another location, you have to have the right systems in place so you can duplicate that. So those are key. We always talk about those two things, and that's key there. So thanks for sharing that, Charlie.
Is your agents, is it mainly they just service your institutional investors, or are they traditional agents as well? Like, do they play both, or do they just really service the institutional?
It's a multi-layer. So obviously we always start out servicing the institutional investors. So we pull tons of data. We pull everything that our buy box in Dallas, which is huge. And then they're reaching out basically saying, you know, would you consider looking at a cash offer? What does that look like for you? And then if our cash offer doesn't work, they're turning that into a traditional listing. So just last week, I think we had two call nights and they picked up 6 new listings in a week, just off of cold calling. And those properties are hitting the market early part of next week. So it always leads, it starts off with the institutional investor, but then transitions into traditional business. Mm-hmm. But I would say that having that institutional investor is a huge key component to our success in Dallas.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, kudos to you. That I like that model and the niche you built there.
So. Yeah, that's cool. So we have a lot of new, you know, listeners there that they're getting started in real estate or investing, or maybe they want to join a successful brokerage like yours. What advice would you give somebody starting out?
Look at everything. There, you take your time and make sure that it's going to be the right fit, because starting over is always a challenge in any industry, whether you're in medical, real estate, investing. Make sure you understand everything up front and make sure that it's going to be a good fit for the long haul. Not just because the longer you stay at one company, the longer you build your brand, the more successful you're going to be. And the longer you stay within the same CRM system, the easier it's going to get year after year. So anybody that's looking to start investing, make sure that you're doing your due diligence and research. There's so many investment networking groups. Mm-hmm. There's so many people out there in that space. And if you're looking to either join a brokerage or open up a brokerage or just shop, make sure that you look at everything and just make sure that it's the right fit based on where your goals align with either the broker, the owner, the support group. And just understand every facet of the company before you jump ship or you rush into a situation not knowing all of the background information.
How important in that world is the training up front for a new investor or new agent versus, I think sometimes people just shop for like, what's going to be the cheapest,
right?
Or, just so that they think they're going to make more, but does it really, in my opinion, it probably comes down to the training, right? Especially as a new agent.
No, absolutely. I mean, training, whether you're an investor or a brand new agent, is key to your success. And most brokerages will, you know, charge you for training. Right now, there's so much free information out there from either title companies, professionals, coaches. There's just a ton of information out there. So whether you're a brand new investor and you're just starting out with bigger pockets to learn just the mediocre stuff, or you're looking to join a brokerage, you just have to understand where the track record is of the person giving the coaching to, because there's a lot of bad information being put out there for investors or agents in general. So I would say that in any company, training has to be a key component to keeping and maintaining your clients or your agents. So yeah. 100% agree with you.
Yeah. And what is what's realistic for for an agent that just got their license, say they go to your firm and you see potential in them and they think that it's a good fit for to join your brokerage. How long does it take to see success on average? And, you know, do you have these statistics? Like, what's an average agent just starting out,
No, absolutely. If an agent's going to come in with me, we really require them to have at least 100 contacts. So the first week, all they're doing is uploading their personal contacts into their CRM. They're basically watching videos on their CRM. The next week, I go over their business plan and implement that. And I've had agents that have come in and that, you know, are very driven, that they're already making their first commission check in the first 45 days. I've also had agents that have tons of talent, but just didn't have the right, you know, mindset, or they just didn't operate their time very well. And it took them 3 or 4 months to get going. But it all really depends on, you know, how well you balance your schedule and your time, your mindset, and then just making sure that you're implementing. Because most people practice, but they never start. So yeah, I'd rather have them fail a ton of times by starting instead of waiting until they feel like they have everything figured out. So we really throw our agents into the fire, so to speak, with my because I'll go on appointments with them until they feel comfortable. I'll meet with buyers, I'll meet with sellers. But it's just getting them comfortable or outside of their comfort level to start making phone calls and driving that business. If an agent doesn't have 100 contacts, it's really difficult for me to really see them having a huge success off the bat. But we can work within that as long as they have the right mindset. But I would say an agent with me, if they come on board within about 45 to 50 days, they should have at least one property under contract with our resources.
Yeah. Wow, that's huge. You spend a lot of time with them. Wow, no wonder why you're so busy. That's great.
So, yeah, I mean, how can people get a hold of you? How can, if they're interested in maybe making a change in a brokerage or just want to find out more information about you, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah. Oh, thank you. You can easily go to windhilladvisorskirby.com. You can call our office and find us on Google. My personal cell is 832-496-2614. I encourage you just to shoot me a text message because my days get pretty hectic. But if you have any questions about, you know, investing in real estate, what it's going to take for you to reach your financial goals, either in investing or as an agent, I'm an open book. I'll give you too much information to make your head spin. I'm not trying to, there's no secrets.
Yeah. That's what we appreciate about you hey guys, he just gave out his personal cell phone. So like, I mean, that's somebody that lives it and breathes it every day. Yeah. So that's awesome. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, Charlie, it has been a pleasure to have you inside the Wolf's Den today. And if there is anything that we can do for you, just don't hesitate to ask.
Awesome. Well, thank you both very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Awesome. So we'll see you all next week, and take care.
See ya.
You've been listening to Inside the Wolf's Den, an entrepreneurial journey with Sean and Joni Wolfswinkle. Tons of entrepreneurial podcasts are out there talking.
Talking.
But Joni and Sean are living it every single day. Their portfolio now includes many franchises and medium-sized businesses. We talk about the trials and motivators of successfully running a business. Join us again soon for another podcast. But until then, reach out on the website at InsideTheWolfsDen.com, on Facebook at Inside the Wolf's Den, on Instagram at Inside the Wolf Den. We'll see you again soon. This is Inside the Wolf's Den. We'll see you next time.